Hi, welcome to the Health Report with me, Norman Swan, on Gadigal land.
And me, Tegan Taylor, on Jagera and Turrbal land. Today, I want to talk about knee injuries in women. It's something I've reported on recently, Norman, ACL or anterior cruciate ligament injury. And it's about another risk factor, the sports bra you're wearing.
A little high up. Well, I'm intrigued to hear about that one. I might have to stop wearing mine. We'll also be talking about pregnancy and ageing. Does pregnancy really make you age? Interesting research.
It definitely makes you feel about 1,000 years old.
Well, is that pregnancy or is that actually what happens after the pregnancy?
Yeah, fair enough. Also, some pretty sobering statistics about when people are released from prison and the fact that they're at their highest risk of dying in just the first few days after they get out. But first, Norman, I do want to talk about some health news. And one of the things that came out in the last couple of days was a big report into attitudes and understanding of dementia in Australia. And it's one of those things that affects hundreds of thousands of people. That number will probably increase. It's kind of something associated with aging, but it's not an inevitable part of aging. So what is dementia, maybe first? And what did this report find?
So dementia is deterioration in thinking ability and memory. That's the simplest way of putting it. It can be far more complicated than that. There are lots of different causes of dementia. Alzheimer's is the commonest cause. But there are other causes of dementia which produce other symptoms. For example, you can have hallucinations in some forms of dementia. In some forms of dementia, you deteriorate more rapidly and so on. And there are mixed pictures, such as Alzheimer's with vascular dementia, where the blood vessels are affected. The arteries in the brain are affected. And just very briefly, this was a survey done by the Australian Institute of Health and Welfare. For those who may not know, the Australian Institute of Health and Welfare has been going a long time now, and it tries to gather together, or it does gather together, available data on health and well-being in Australia. And this was a survey they put out in the last few days. There's a reasonable sample, 5,400 people aged over 18, and the survey was done last year, so it's unlikely that anything's happened in the last year to change things.
Well, hopefully people are listening to the health report and getting informed here.
Yeah, and I think it was just after my four corners on dementia, so maybe, you know, I'm sure all 4,500 in the survey were watching Four Corners. Anyway, they found that generally the knowledge base about dementia and what you can do to prevent it is not as good as it should be. It's better in some groups. The wealthier you are, the more educated you are, the better you understand it, the more you are part of the English-speaking community of Australia rather than the culturally and linguistically diverse community, the more you understand about dementia. So it shows where we need to focus because, as we'll talk about in a future What's That Rash, there are lots of things you can do about dementia, and it's important people know that.
Yes, please subscribe to Watch That Rash on the ABC Listen app. But while we've got you, what briefly are some of the main risk factors and how can people moderate them?
So risk factors are high blood pressure, diabetes, family history. Those would be the main obvious risk factors. And then there are protective factors that can actually reduce it. Exercise, diet, intellectual activity, which is more than just Sudoku, and there's other things as well.
So another really, really big part of the health news landscape this past week or two or three has been avian influenza. It's a highly pathogenic form of H5N1 influenza, and it's kind of touched every continent, including Antarctica, except for Australia so far as we know. The concerns in America especially are getting quite high.
Yes, we spoke about it a couple of weeks ago. You say it's not been in Australia so far. We've been looking at it a little bit. If you actually go to the Wildlife Health Australia website, they've got the responsibility for monitoring this. They do have emergency lines where you can phone in if you think there's something, you found an animal in the wild that's sick and you want to report it. But all they say on their website, and we've been having trouble getting through to them personally, is that they think we're at low risk in Australia, presumably because of migratory bird patterns. But, you know, migratory birds from Australia do go into the Northern Hemisphere, so it's not quite sure where that confidence comes from. But if you look at the United States, we spoke a couple of weeks ago about the spread into the dairy herd in the United States, and that spread has continued well over 30 dairy herds. Some people think it's up to 40 dairy herds, but the official statistics are somewhere in the low 30s in many states. And the other concern in the United States is reports that they've found viral particles, the flu viral particles, in the milk supply.
And they've done it through PCR testing, which is really accurate in terms of finding small particles, but you can't tell using that method whether the virus is alive or dead.
That's right. Now, they do say they're trying to grow the virus, but there haven't been reports of what the results of those tests have been. So the concerns have been elevated about the milk supply. The authorities say you shouldn't be worried about the milk supply because pasteurisation kills viruses, and therefore, even if there was live virus in the milk supply, it would be killed by the pasteurisation process. They're also saying that sick cows are being eliminated from their milk getting into the milk supply, and that's also a protection there in the United States. But it just shows you when this starts to spread, and just to remind people what we're talking about here, while we're talking about avian flu, there have been mutations over the last few years which have allowed the flu to get into mammals, various mammals, and now it's in the dairy herd in the United States. So this can spread. And then the question is, can it jump to humans? And there's been one case reported from the dairy herd, but not human-to-human spread. And that's the terrifying option here, because this is a highly lethal version of the influenza virus.
What could Australia be doing more of, apart from surveillance, to prevent it from taking hold here?
There's a fair bit of surveillance going on in the United States, but you're talking about migratory birds. You're talking about birds arriving in Australia and spreading it to the domestic herd or other animals that we come in contact with. So there's not much you can do about that apart from surveillance and just watching it and trying to control it when it does break out. We've seen mass culling of poultry, for example, around the world to stop it spreading. So when you actually pick it up, it has huge impact on the farming community, but that is to stop it spreading elsewhere and becoming much worse.
Well, let's talk about the other pandemic, the one that we have spent a lot of time talking about. And I guess the backdrop to the bird flu story, as much as anything, is avoiding another pandemic like COVID. But coming to COVID, there's been a review of treatment guidelines across many, many different countries, and finding that there's a really big gap between what the World Health Organization recommends as the best practice treatments for COVID and what various countries recommend, including some thoroughly debunked treatments that are still recommended in low-income countries.
Yes. So if you look at the variation around the world, according to WHO guidelines, and WHO guidelines are really about, have you got mild disease? Have you got severe disease? Are you in hospital? And here's what you use in those different situations. And for example, they put a high priority on Paxlovid as an antiviral and lower on Molnupiravir, which is the other one commonly used in Australia. But it took me ages to go through the WHO guideline in detail. But if you look overall, the problem with variation around the world is that out-of-date drugs are being used that don't necessarily work on the current viruses that are circulating. There are some countries still using zinc, vitamins, ivermectin, that notorious drug which is very good for river blindness and used as a sheep dip as well. So it's not a bad drug, but it's a bad drug for COVID-19. Mm. And also antibiotics, a drug called azithromycin is being used in some places. And often these are low to middle income countries which don't have a lot of money, so they're wasting money and not helping people in their population by using these drugs. So this is really a warning sign for the world that this variation around the world is not necessarily helping people, and there'll be people who are dying or more seriously ill than they otherwise need to be because of this variation.
Why are they still recommending these things when there's so much evidence that they're useless or possibly harmful?
There are many reasons, and the researchers outline them. One is confusion. Mm. There was a lot of confusion in the early days, and that confusion persists. The WHO guidelines have changed according to the evidence changing. For example, if you take remdesivir, which is something we spoke about on CoronaCast a lot in the early days, it was controversial in the early days whether it helped or not. And so if you look at remdesivir, you could be justifiably confused about where you use it. And do you only use it in people who are severely ill in hospital, or do you use it in people who are mildly ill? And the WHO recommendations now say, well, you can actually use this when you're not severely ill, and there's some evidence that it prevents you to some extent progressing, but of course you've got Paxlovid in countries like Australia, which also do that. And the research landscape is confusing, according to the researchers, and therefore if you're trying to get through this fog, if you like, it can be hard for countries which don't necessarily have the scientific resources of countries like Australia. And we've had groups in Australia, or one group in particular, looking at national guidelines and the evidence for interventions with COVID-19, which other countries haven't necessarily got the benefit of. So richer countries tend to be closer to the guidelines, like Australia, than countries which are poorer and just don't have the resources to do the analysis. And then you've got the affordability. And so probably you've got a sense where it's better to give something rather than nothing, and vitamins and zinc are cheaper, but they're not actually doing any good.
Yeah, and like the whole purpose of, well, not the whole purpose, but a main purpose of an organisation like World Health Organization is to provide those resources to lower and middle income countries.
Yeah, but having talked about money, I mean, I'll quote you the paper here. It's saying the irony here is it's not just cheap drugs, as like I was talking about. They say ineffective, unaffordable and unavailable therapies are widely recommended, particularly in low-resource settings. I mean, that's hugely ironic, which means that if they have got money and they're spending on it, they're wasting money, which could be spent on other things.
And just staying with COVID, there's another piece of research that's come out quite recently about long COVID and what's happening with the virus in the body.
Yeah, this is Chinese research, which suggests, and it's not the only research to have found this, is that there's, if you like, genetic footprints that the virus persists in tissues. It's a small study, a couple hundred people, but they found that people with long COVID symptoms tend to have evidence of viral persistence or viral fragment persistence in the tissues. It's a bit like the flu story that we did earlier. Is it actually flu in milk? Is it actually active COVID-19? Unlikely, but you're certainly seeing viral fragments there. Other research has found that. Other research has not found that. So it's still a matter of controversy. It just highlights the fact that we're still got a lot to learn about long COVID, and research is still swinging around in terms of what it's finding.
And we'll keep covering it.
We will.
You're with the Health Report.
Find more great ABC RN stories that take you beyond the headlines on the ABC Listen app.